You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 148. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll discuss some meatballs, we'll talk about the amazingness of the pitching staff, Ty Vanbrugh has opted out, we'll talk about the Indians coaching shuffle going on, and we'll discuss what they should, if anything, should do at the deadline, and of course we'll take your questions. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Matt?
Doing good. There's baseball. I think we've reached full sports density now for the first time in months, which is cool.
I was like, watching Champions League soccer, and then at the same time watching baseball, and then hockey was also on during the
that was also on somewhere that I wasn't watching.
And I was watching like the Bucks game or something. I don't even know. Like,
but there's so many options, and it's great. I can just wake up and I either put on Quick Pitch or Sports Center. It has mindless background noise, and it's so good.
Will there be a point, and I don't know this for sure, not where on a Sunday soon there will theoretically be able to chance to watch every single sport? I don't know if that's possible or not, but it could be. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I think MLS will be around. I think basketball probably. How long do they even go? What are they doing?
I have no clue. I have zero idea.
Because their next season should be starting pretty soon, right?
I know. They're just kind of playing for a while, it seems like. Because they're playing like 74 games or something. And then like I was watching hockey for a few minutes. And it just said round robin up in the corner. I'm like, I don't know what that means. So,
I'm watching. I don't care.
All right. Yeah. I'll tune in for a bit. But yeah, like the Premier League season just ended and it's starting again. And also the Champions League like quarterfinals is coming up. And also the Champions League group stages are kicking off in like 2 weeks. So soccer is eating its own tail.
They're going to be playing a lot and then going straight into their normal stuff. So.
Yeah, I know. Oh, exactly. It's MLS, they just finished their tournament, and I guess they are going back to be playing in their home cities, which is great. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I didn't even know what was going. So they did a tournament just to be back, which doesn't count for anything, and then they're going back to a regular season? Like, is this their championship from last year?
I am unclear. Honestly, I know.
That's how you know it's going great.
They were talking about the supporters' shield being on the line, which is what you get when you win the regular season, I think. Because they had the regular season, they also have the tournament at the end, kind of like the Mexican soccer. But I don't know. I don't know if they're just like, so this has been a fun thing, which is honestly cool, fine. You know, whatever. If you're the winner of that cool trophy, then you have a thing that hopefully we never have to give out another one of.
And it would be kind of cool to make it a one-off thing, especially for a sport like soccer that got interrupted in the middle. Because basketball's whole thing was, I mean, even hockey's the same, as they got everything screwed up in the middle of their season. So now they're... Yeah. It's like two different seasons, but you get one trophy out of it. So, you know. That's enough about other sports. You know what we need to talk about?
Let's hop in.
Meatballs. So I like mine this week. I'm excited about mine, but I'm going to make you go first. I'm going to save the best. It's probably not the best, but what's your meatball this week, Merritt?
This circles around a mighty human being, a man big as a house, arms like tree trunks, head like a block of granite. I don't know. I'm sure he's a smart guy. Franmil Reyes. Is it really?
It's something with Franmil. We got to check these beforehand, I guess. I swear to God, if you took my same one.
Well, all right. So he has six hits over this series. Well, over the last three games. But I wanted to talk about a pair of them specifically because of how the broadcast crew reacted to them. He hit two home runs, which is really cool. But he also hit a 66 mile an hour exit velocity single. A line drive to Nick Castellanos against the Reds. And a couple nights later, he hit a 69-mile-an-hour single on a grounder to Adam Engel of the White Sox. Both times, perfectly placed, it was said. And I don't know. I thought it was funny and neat that this is a guy who you go down his batted ball list, and it's just 105, 107, 98, obliterating the ball, but two of the hits that have been kind of getting him to get out of his slump, I guess, as it were, have just been garbage. Check swings and like one of them, honestly, I think he check swinged and hit and still hit the ball like 90 miles an hour or something like that. So I don't know. It's the kind of thing that happens when things start going good for a guy. And when you get out of a slump, the hits that were not hits are now hits, and you get accidents get to go with you along with the missiles. So It makes me feel good because he needs to be able to hit because they have the worst offense in all of baseball. And if he doesn't hit and no one else hits, then they're still going to win half their games, it seems like. But still, it sucks. Anyway, that's mine. Just Franmil Reyes. Lucky and hilarious at it. Yeah.
That's essentially mine too. Mine is focused on the check swings because I noticed the one that he got a hit on, and there was also that was off Dylan Cease. It was 69 mm-hmm. miles an hour, like you said. That was the one he got a hit, but also he had two other ones previously. There was one the day before off Luis Castillo. That one was 65 miles an hour, but it went straight to Joey Votto. If Votto doesn't make a great play, that's another hit he has on a check swing.
Yeah, he's been
and these are like hideous swings. He's clearly not swinging.
Oh, horrendously.
And he's still hitting it out at like 70 miles an hour, which is ridiculous.
I think it was, so he singled against Zach Littell at 98 miles an hour on a grounder. No, that was left field too. So I don't know.
That was, I saw that. That was like a protect swing. That wasn't quite a check swing.
I don't know. Like the RBI, he had a couple RBIs. He had the other night, this little kind of blooper where he just got jammed right up there. And he is so goddamn strong. I mean, to be able to get that 120 feet away from the plate and to drop for a hit, like, those home runs he hit, what, they were 102 miles an hour? No, 107 miles an hour and then 100 and whatever else, 101. He does that by accident. He just has such dummy power. It's so cool. And I think him getting out of his own head is going to – I don't think he's going to, you know, be a 290 hitter with a 350 on base percentage. But, like, as long as he's making – like, he can – it's like – I don't know. We have pined – you specifically have pined for Joey Gallo for a while now, and you have him now, man. Here he is. This is Joey Gallo, a massively strong human being who hits home runs by accident. And you're right. First of all, we do need to check these, or at least the subject beforehand. But he's been it's been nice to see him kind of break out. I had a couple other ones that I had half put together, but I couldn't find the numbers behind it.
Is it good or bad that he's hitting these check swing? Like, is it a sign that he should just be swinging at the dang things, or is it good that he's I mean, that means he's locating well, or he's tracking the pitch, but he's not confident enough to swing at it for some reason. Or maybe he's just not tracking it. It was three straight luck pitches.
I mean, but again, that's...
I can't decide if it's good or bad that he's doing this so often.
There's one of the many old adages in baseball is just that when you're going good, the bloops fall in all the time. And that just seems to be what's happening with him. Like, both those times... Like,
well, I mean, he's not going good, though. I mean...
Well, I mean,
for that first one was before his home run.
That's true. Yes, correct. But like, he's starting to go. Like, things seem to be turning in his direction. This is kind of when one gets on a hot streak. But I mean, you're right. I don't think he needs to try and hit the ball. You know, pull the ball. Rick Manning's made this point time and time again. Like when he's going really good, he's hitting the home runs like we saw. Right, like they're going to dead center or they're going to right center because he just has that kind of power. It reminds me of. Of all people, of Matt Kemp, the year he should have won the MVP, like he hit like 50 whatever home runs, and they were all, it seemed like, to that kind of just to the right of center field was when he really clobbered him. And that's what Reyes needs to do, because that's when he's timing it correctly and whatnot. So, I mean, I agree. I think he needs to swing more. He's taking too many goddamn pitches. I'm sure we're going to see that happen tonight. It's going to make us all poop ourselves, but...
Yeah, those strike threes, man, those are brutal. And the one he hit, because for some fun behind the scenes, when you wrote the article about Franmil Reyes, he hit a home run, I think, like right after you submitted it, or maybe
literally
right before.
As I was, it happened. Yes.
But also it fit in because that the home run was on a two strike pitch that was right down the middle, and he didn't just stare at it; he actually swung at it. So it was neat to work it in. You could see that's what he was struggling with, and he fixed it for this one at bat, at least. Temporarily, and then good lord, he crushed it. So,
well, again, like that's just the whole between the ears thing is it's such an under explored thing, especially for hitters. I think, you know, we've seen such leaps and bounds made when it comes to pitching and how you can change that and become much better at it. Because, and I just this is, I it's not really an opinion, it just is what it is. But pitching is very much the action. And everything else that is a reaction to the pitch being thrown, and being able to control the action is so much easier psychologically, so much easier to do because everyone else has to respond to what you're doing. It's the same reason it's harder to be a cornerback than it is to be a wide receiver. You know, the wide receiver knows everything that's happening. The cornerback is just guessing. So to be a hitter, the psychological aspect of that is just, I think, as important as the physical. Being able to hit the ball a quarter mile is great, but if you are up your own ass with it. You know, you can't think straight. Like, I don't know why more teams don't, I don't know, have maybe not a psychologist, but like a someone to talk to, quote unquote. And I guess that'd be what a hitting coach is. I don't know, but
I think that's what a lot of managers end up being, because there's not a whole, I mean, they're not making super tough decisions out there anymore. They're just going by the numbers. I would think a lot of the times they turn into just the guy to talk to and get your head straight before a game. We know that's what Terry Francona is really good at.
Well, it's just weird too, that like, I was thinking about this the other day too, with the Baltimore Ravens hired like this quantitative guy to follow who's their head coaches? I don't remember his name. One of the Harbaughs, John Harbaugh, follow him around and like tell him when to go for it and stuff like that. And like, you saw the Ravens become much more aggressive because it made more sense. And it just, it's one of those many things, like so many multi-billion dollar industries that when you really start paying attention is run so stupidly with like, just like, because it's always been done that way. The fact that the staffs, whether it's the in the dugout staff or the people immediately behind the dugout, why those staffs aren't bigger to help delve into the deeper things within the game. You know, like if there was someone who was good at talking to batters and making and getting them to get out of their own head and things like that. This is just me kind of thinking this way, but like if you just could have more people to help that with that support network, for lack of a better term, to help guys just be better at the game, be able to focus better on the game and not get so down into a slump, because it's such a psychological game. I mean, Reyes said it himself. So it's wild to me that we still are just like, yeah, you have a bench coach and you have a hitting coach and you have a manager, and their jobs are to tell you to watch more film and sit next to the manager and eat seeds. And apparently for the manager, it's do everything, be a sounding board, be a dad, be all these different things. And like, why shouldn't the website I used to write for, their then editor, he wrote a for his like dissertation or whatever it is for when you graduate from an Ivy League school, he wrote a thing about how there was a major inefficiency within baseball when it came to paying front office staff, because you can, like, working for a front office, you're not making that much money. Right, because they understand they're able to pay you less. Like, obviously, a general manager makes a lot of money, but like if you're just one of the quants or something like that, they're not making a ton of money. So if you could pay more than other teams, not by a lot, like instead of paying them $40,000 a year, you pay them $50,000 a year. I would move from Baltimore to Cleveland or whatever, and take an extra 10 G's, and still work in baseball. And I don't know, it's amazing they don't invest what would be way cheaper than if you're buying players to make those kind of around the edges adjustments. And I think teams are doing that. It's just,
yeah. And I think we see that too. Like, it might be that it's more effective to have a player like that. Like Trevor Bauer has talked about being a conduit for the stats. And I think we've seen that even just on the pitching staff. It started with Bauer and then it trickled down to like Clevinger and now Bieber and Plesac. And I'm assuming Savali, all of this friendship that they're all learning off each other and being that sounding board. I'm sure that Mickey Callaway was at one point and Carl Willis is, but if you can have players that act that role, I'm sure that's way better than having a coach who can do it. So I think we're seeing the benefit of it just on the pitching side. I don't know if it's actually happening pitching wise or batting wise.
That too could be why you see so many people from places like Driveline Baseball, which has been a haven for players. So it's not quite a player going to get a job, but it's someone who they've already interacted with, who has a pedigree for, like, he's not just a guy who knows how to talk to people. He's a guy who has worked around baseball already, worked with current players, and has a knowledge of the current game. You know what I mean? So rather than just being another economist you hire to, instead of figure out how to, whatever, shave an extra few bucks off, whatever, and then, you know, to figure out how to be better at building a team, it's someone who is involved in the game already and can communicate these kind of more advanced ideas to existing players, and they have that pedigree that they can trust. So it's like that kind of abstraction, I guess. So because Bauer is who he is, in part because, I mean, he teaches the same things that guys like Kyle Boddy do, you know. He's because they are, you know, they both did the same, I don't know, they work together so much. So
yeah, and right now the Indians are they're going to test how effective this all is and like how much they need a consistent manager. I mean, with the fact that Terry Francona is out for, it's going on a week now, I think, and Sandy Alomar is in there, and Brad Mills was out right away. Ty Van Berkelo recently opted out. It's a whole, I mean, there's a whole lot of shuffle going on
right now.
Yeah, I didn't
think about that, huh? Yeah, their entire...
Yeah, there's a nobody there. Like, their hitting coach, who's the base? Mike Sarbaugh, he's in the dugout now. They have a different third base coach. So everybody on the field is different than it was before because somebody had to replace Sandy at first base, obviously, and then Sarbaugh, that's his name, right?
Mike Sarbaugh.
Yeah, there you go. He was so he's just helping out Sandy as an extra pair of eyes right now, but it's all different now. Even Ty Van Berkelo, it was kind of odd timing that he opted out when the Indians scored 13 runs, but he cited his own COVID-19 concerns. Yeah, right after it happened. but it sounded like he was, I think at this point you take anybody who says they're opting out for COVID-19, you got to take them at their word. Otherwise, they're just being basically garbage people lying about it. But I don't think that's what Van Berkelo was doing. He said basically the fact that when the Indians came so close to it playing in Minnesota after the Cardinals did, that as a high-risk person himself, just because of his age, and he said he had a condition and complicated family matters, that it made sense for him to opt out. Which I'm all for. There was some people just being, I get joking about it because I don't think he's super great coach either, but there are some people who are downright like nasty about the fact that he was leaving, which is kind of shitty. But I think in general, like,
Everyone's shitty. Sean Doolittle had to shut down his Twitter account because people are shitty. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. So
yeah, that's extremely bad.
But you're right. I didn't even think about the whole everyone's, you know, there's a complete, I guess this is, you know, we many people in the past have joked about the quote unquote value of veteran presence and it being stupid, right? Like, I'd rather have a more talented young guy than a worse older dude because that guy's nebulous ability to do whatever. Although we've seen the impact of that in the past with like Juan Uribe. And now there's guys who are kind of ensconced there and they all know each other too, which is helpful. Like, there's not a lot of veterans.
I mean, Lindor's the veteran now, right? Yeah, because remember there was that time that Oscar Mercado said that Lindor was helping him something and he got excited on the bases and it was Brantley that passed that down to Lindor. So we're still seeing it with the players, which is nice.
Right, exactly.
I mean, before it used to be Mike Napoli.
It was Lindor who basically got Leonis Martin kicked off the team.
Yeah, I remember. Well, wasn't it like the day after he was yelling at him in the dugout, like, all right, he's done?
Literally gone. Like, that's it. All right, he is out of here. So yeah,
I would love to know what was being said there, and I'm sure it wasn't.
Oh, 100%. But yeah, with the pitching staff, like, somehow Shane Bieber is already a veteran. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Clevinger as well, and he's definitely, like, those guys have very quickly taken on the mantle. I guess when you win an All-Star Game MVP, that already matters.
And who would have thought that this year, Mike Clevinger being the worst pitcher, what would first of all happen, and second of all, the rotation would still be this good. Like,
not be a problem.
Clevinger has been
all
the worst two times through the rotation now, and he's had his own issues. But one really funny thing that I think it was actually Zach Mizell was talking to the Indians. Like, Mike Clevinger has a new pitch basically, and he was being real cagey about it. He said it has a mind of his own. He's just throwing it to mix people up, and then he talked to Sandy Leone. I was like, yeah, it's a cutter. That was funny. So, I mean, Clevinger has a new pitch, and even Shane Bieber on Fangraphs, Ben Clemens wrote about it, that last year he was basically looking for something to work with his slider just as a way to improve. And he got a curveball that basically mimicked the horizontal movement, which is almost none. So just a straight dropping curveball. It didn't quite work the way he wanted to. And then this year he's essentially throwing two curveballs, which Baseball Savant, the way it categorizes slider. It. Right, yeah. Baseball Savant. As the way they categorize pitches, he's thrown his curveball 30% of the time this year, up from 20%. And it's the best curveball in baseball by weighted pitch value at 4. The next close is Sonny Gray at 3.5. So it is a super dominant curveball, or curveballs, however you want to say it. But this whole pitching staff has just been incredible this year. I think one of the more telling things, like, they obviously lead in ERA, strikeout rate, walk rate, ERA minus. They lead are really close and all that. But they have 102 innings pitched, which is 20 innings more than the closest starter. So they're getting in and staying in. This bullpen's going to be like really good. Hopefully can stay good and rested for so long, because the starters have pitched, what is that, like a full almost three games or two games, a little over two games completely over the next closest, which is the Reds. But yeah, just this whole rotation. It's Bieber, Carrasco, who we haven't mentioned yet, but I mean, he's also been really good. Clevinger, Plesac, and Savali is incredible. Adam Pluko has been good when he came in as a starter once, and then as a reliever, he did pretty good. So, what are your thoughts on this whole rotation? Is the fact that they're looking like the best ever? They're insane so far. Which I'm sure some of that is just the fact that offenses are not quite warmed up, but also nobody else is as dominant as these guys are, other than maybe the Reds.
Well, you know, and like, I was watching Plesac pitch yesterday, and he has now three starts, right? And like, the the White Sox are not a bad offense by any stretch. They're, I mean, by several metrics, they're a top five or top 10 offense in all of baseball. And he's utterly silenced them. And then the Reds, too, are they're not a great offense, and he gave up some runs to them, but there were some stinky pitches he threw. And, I mean, no one's expecting Zach Plesac to be the ace of this staff. The fact that he is, what, the third or fourth best pitcher on the team right now is absolutely stupid. It is wild to me that Shane Bieber is just basically doing what Corey Kluber did in developing not even a slider or a curve, just a breaking pitch. Because, like, at this point, he still has a slider. And he still has a basically like almost a 12-6 curveball, but he also has that kind of in the middle ground too. So what do you even try and hit? I don't know. It is wild to me that he has shown. I don't know, Matt. Well, I remember when he debuted, and it was just like, Francona was like trying to keep down the comparisons to Corey Kluber and things like that. And like, you know, it's not the talent; it's the mentality, and like the way he approaches the game. He's very quiet and stoic, yeah, and things like that. But he's just so good. I mean, he's just so goddamn good.
Well, I mean, at first when he came up, he wasn't like this. He was just the guy who didn't walk anybody and was also pretty good. But now he's striking everybody out.
His ability to this is what I thought separated him, and I could just see it coming his rookie year. He was not throwing just a lot of strikes. He was still throwing the same kind of strikes he throws now, which are just those, like, right on the black kind of strikes. Like, perfect, absolute perfect pitches. He does it over and over and over and over, and I don't understand how that's physically possible. And then secondly, I don't understand how only he can do it. Like, Aaron Savali has an ability to do that. I think he leaves the ball up too much still, and it's going to be a problem for him going forward if he continues to do that. I mean, his fielding independent pitching would disagree with me, but still. So, I don't know. Shane Bieber has been just so goddamn good. And he keeps on getting better. Like, he was so good last year, and I don't understand how you get a hit off him at this point. Like, obviously, if he has a bad night.
I don't know how you'd even look and, like, be ready to plate for, because he just has so many pitches and they all look the same.
Like, yeah,
for so long.
Like, at this point, if he's not feeling X, he can just go to one of three other near elite pitches. And at the end of the day, like, if his control is only 80% of what it's supposed to be, it's still like Roy Halladay at his best quality. It's absolutely insane to me that, like, I'm talking about Carlos Carrasco. I mean, it was kind of a passing fancy of a thing of him being the third best pitcher when Trevor Bauer had that great year. But, like, he is firmly the third best pitcher on the team, and also the fourth best pitcher, or fifth, might be Mike Clevinger, who, even when we say that, he's been very effective. Like, he's been kind of effectively wild kind of a pitcher who continues to figure it out, and I don't know. I'm sure that'll work out, but worst case scenario, it doesn't, and he's
still a really good pitcher.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Like, no, I'm truly blown away by their ability to do this. I had mentioned this, and I was going to bring it up later too, but I tweeted that out yesterday that they are an elite team in every single aspect of the game except for hitting, which, you know, sucks. But
some say that's important. I don't know about,
like,
that, though.
I checked, like, every stat I could find. Like, they're top three or top five in pitching, defense, base running they're not great at. I mean, obviously having Reyes and Santana, and then also Santana on the team doesn't really help a lot.
Yeah, weren't they, like, one of the top in was a defensive run save? There's one defensive stat where they, like, lead everybody, and they have the least amount of chances to make defensive plays because of how many strikeouts the pitching staff gets. So that shows you just how good they've been, like, on defense.
I mean, Cesar Hernandez has been so good, and I don't know how much. I mean, and it's great. I don't care. I don't know, and I don't care, but I'm wondering how much of this is helping guys like Plesac and Savali kind of ease in, because they're showing such tremendous growth over last year. I mean, I tried putting that article I wrote the other day about Clevinger. Is that what it ended up being?
There's one about Clevinger, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote three articles that night, and two of them just did not come together. One of them is going to be just writing about just ranking the curveballs of the team, because I think it was after Savali was just dropping some hammers. Shane Bieber, obviously, he's very good, but they all have amazing curveballs. And this is an article I've been wanting to write, and I've written it kind of halfway in the past. And I've talked about it before too, but are the Indians just, we're throwing curveballs? It's what our team does. We're going to be known, like, the Rays for a long time were known for having great changeups and developing great changeups, but Plesac's curveball, not only, All right, so here's the thing about someone like Plesac. Like, it's not technically, quote unquote, a great curveball. Like, if you look at it, the movement numbers, every single pitch he throws is below average. I mean, Shane Bieber has a good slider, but like a lot of the pitches these guys are throwing in a vacuum aren't amazing. But they pair so well with everything else they throw that I don't know maybe that's what they're known for. They're just known for building guys who tunnel well, right? Or
like, no, I think that's absolutely what it is. They've gone all in on tunneling and how effective it can be. You can see that in every single pitcher. Like, I don't know if they drafted Plesac and Savali for that reason, but they've done such a good job molding them in the thought process of you've got to be good at tunneling, which I think that started with Corey Kluber and finding out how good he was at it and how effective it could be, and now everybody does it.
Like that, and that's the thing with Bieber too. Like, even when he was his rookie year, like, just seeing his ability to, like, his slider was never any good. Like, not when I say never any good, it was again in a vacuum a mediocre pitch. But because you always had to be ready for that fastball on the outside corner, you had to swing and miss at it. Like, I think he hit 11.5 strikeouts per nine last year, something like that. Yeah, 10.9. So yeah. But like, he was throwing curveballs, or his changeup so wasn't that good. He had gone mostly to that slider. That's what that Fangraphs article was mentioning. But he just hid pitches so well. His ability to, like, within his body hide the pitch on the delivery too. Like, that's what these guys all do. They have such perfect, like, outside of Mike Clevinger, I think, especially the three developmental cases from that draft, from the 16 draft, are such, like, perfect, like, pitchers in that sense, where it's just the motion is so good, and like, the everything about them is just very well developed, I guess. It's a weird thing to say. but I don't know. It's wild to me that they're able to do this. And also, those three guys were drafted at the same time. They're all 25. Yeah, they're all making a combined, $1.5 million a year, something like that. Like, it's pretty stupid. Like, we're worried about some kind of like end to this whole run, and then it's just like, oh, also these guys are going to make it, so they can't they can't lose more than 80 games in a season. They're going to be a winning team forever, even if it's not a ton of fun. So
now the question becomes, do they trade one of them or somebody just to get offensive help either this year in this weird season, or find somebody who's here longer? Like, I feel at this point they could, if they really wanted to, they could flip Savali or Plesac, or
definitely.
They could trade Carrasco, which would make them the biggest assholes in the world, but they could flip one of these guys and get offensive help for long term. But I don't think they or anybody is going to do really anything as a rental this year, because the fact that it could just end in a week is too terrifying to put any kind of value into. But I could see them either flipping a pitcher, or whenever they trade Francisco Lindor, if they can get somebody long term for him, maybe. But I don't know if it's going to be at this deadline, though. I would put money on them not doing anything, and barely anybody doing anything at the deadline this year.
I agree with you. I mean, I've been saying and thinking and wondering why they don't trade one of their pitchers for offensive help forever. They finally traded two of those pitchers, I guess, last year. And they did. They got Fernando Reyes, and they got Yasiel Puig. But then the other one, they traded for a goddamn reliever and then an outfielder who can't hit.
They're 50-50 so far. 50%.
The relievers. Now, I will say this. The two things that I complain that I think we all complain about with this team is, one, they're hideously flawed offensively, right? Like, they have 3.5 good hitters right now, basically. They have guys that we like, and we have hope. I think if you could somehow combine Cesar Hernandez and Franmil Reyes, you'd have a super god star, because he'd get on base all the time. He'd see a million pitches and he'd hit the ball, a million feet. But like, after about five in the lineup, it really starts to fall off, depending on which Domingo Santana you get. If they could just, and then the other side of that being, of course, they can't seem to develop a guy. Watching Dylan Cease hit 100 miles an hour by accident the other day was like frustrating to me on a level I didn't understand. Like, he's not having a great year, but he made what's his name, Jose Ramirez, fall over with a slider, and then he also at one point he just spotted 100 in the fourth inning, just bang. It was a fastball to Franmil Reyes, actually, that he didn't swing on. The Indians can't seem to develop velocity of all the things they can do and find. Like, James Karinchak is the hardest throwing guy to come out of their farm system, I think, since like Cody Allen. And it's not like he throws super hard. He's not he throws an above average fastball in terms of velocity, but it's not like lighting up the radar and us going, ooh, very nice. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that guy from St. Louis whose name is escaping me at the moment. Or I don't know. It's just with how velocity has risen. So, like, goddamn Dodgers are just rolling out these starters. The redheaded guy, Walker Buehler.
Yeah, Dustin May is just out there throwing UFOs. I don't know what the hell his pitches do. Did you see that one two-seamer?
Yeah, that was crazy. Everyone saw that stupid thing. Like, what are they? I don't know. Like, yeah. It's just the Indians, the one thing they can't seem to do is develop velocity. Velocity and a good consistent bat consistently. Like,
I don't think they care a whole lot about velocity. Bat. I think, I think they're just all in on tunneling and the benefits of focusing on that. I don't think they even care about. I mean, obviously they want velocity. It helps and it's important right now. But I also think they've gone so far in on just tunnel everything and make all your pitches look the same until they break at the last second and you're going to be fine.
And part of that, obviously, I think is a money thing too. Like, the Dodgers can afford to spend over slot and things like that. And like, it's easier for them in a sense to draft and develop because they have all that money lying over there. But the Indians, first of all, haven't drafted very high in a long time. I think the last high draft pick they had was probably Francisco Lindor. They've been a winning team since Terry Francona came over. So they're drafting like 16th at the worst. But even Lindor was a 12th overall pick. So they can get guys like Bieber and Plesac and Savali who have certain aspects to them that they can start molding around. And yeah. One of the things will not ever be velocity, apparently. But I don't know. I've wondered why they haven't done that for years to get more help. And Framil Reyes is supposed to be that help. This year's just been a little bit rough, I guess.
I think they'll still get there. I'm not giving up on him by any stretch. But
I was so excited for that Verdugo, the idea of Alex Verdugo coming over, like for that would have been Corey Kluber, I guess. I was so all in on that trade. Yeah. Because he would have just been that kind of guy to hit 280 with 350 on base percentage and with a 500 slugging percentage and just be good. I honestly don't know how well he's doing with the Red Sox. I'm literally finding out as I continue to talk.
No, he's hitting really good for the Red Sox.
Oh, he's hitting 289, 357, yes. 520. Okay,
he's been great, yeah.
The thing I said just now, yeah, he's doing that.
Yeah, that was a couple years. Obviously, it's important to note that wasn't this offseason when we might get Alex Verdugo. It was a couple years ago.
It was the year before Corey Kluber got hurt. I think it was that winter before. So,
I mean, we'll never know. They'll take it to the grave. But can you imagine if they had like either Verdugo or Bellinger on the table and said, no, thank you. We like Corey Kluber. That's got to eat them up inside every night.
I'd set something on fire. I don't know what.
Or Chris Antonetti just punches his pillow every night before he goes to bed.
What am I doing? I don't, man. Just one of those guys would make this lineup so dumb. Yeah. Now I'm imagining that. I assume you'll lead off with Carlos Santana at that point. Then you go, Reyes, Bellinger, Lindor.
That's ridiculous.
There's so many. I don't know. That's a banana boy. But again, this is the strength I've always had is these pitchers. And is there another one coming? I don't know. Because when you look at their top pitchers, Aaron Savali was never that highly rated. You know, like Zach Plesac was never really like a super high draft, like a farm guy, was he? I don't think he was.
No, he was drafted like 12th round.
Exactly, 12th round. I don't think he ever really rated.
I mean, he wasn't even going to be a starter this year. What are you talking about as a prospect? He was. Yeah, well, this year he's going to be in the bullpen.
Like, I don't think he ever really showed up that high on their prospect list. You know, like, I don't think he was ever considered a top 30 prospect. And now they still have guys down there who are top 30 prospects. Maybe that's their idea. They can get top 30 prospect pitchers, trade them because who cares? Because they're turning Shane right. Bieber into Cy Young candidates. So yeah.
Yeah, but now they have like Nolan Jones and that's it. So they're reaching a point where it's going to be an issue now with their offense, especially that they're not going to have long-term solutions because, I mean, and more ratings, like people have given up on Tristan McKenzie, who they can't really trade anymore. I don't think he has any value. I don't think they're going to trade Lindor at the deadline just because I think it's better to hold on to him for the chance you make the playoff, the chance that the playoffs exist than trading him to somebody else who will bet they exist. I think you're better off just to hold him. And then trade him in the offseason if you're really going to, which I think they will. As far as this deadline, I think it's going to be dead. I can't imagine anybody does major moves.
Yeah, I'd be very,
especially the Indians,
very surprised. Like it's just I'll be honest. I didn't even think about the fact that the whole house of cards could fall over next week. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, imagine you trade. I don't know who's a big rental this year, but you trade a bunch of prospects for just. I guess even in a regular season, you don't trade a bunch of prospects for rental anymore, but. Imagine you get one and then it's done. It's almost like what we thought the Dodgers was going to happen to them when it looked like the season would never happen and they traded for Mookie Betts and there was nothing. But now clearly that's worked out. They've got him forever.
I mean, you look at the, like right now, the playoffs would be what the, Jesus Christ,
everybody
really?
Gets in Merritt. What are you talking about?
Oh, I mean, okay, that's the thing. Cause it's what, 8 teams now from each league? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the top 2 plus 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, like stupid. the Orioles, the Tigers, would be the because that's the thing. Right now, who the hell knows? Everything is so close. The Marlins are in first place. The Rockies are in first. Oh shit!
Yeah,
oh,
wow. Everybody gets in.
Yeah, like the Astros are in second place, and they have a losing record. Like it's wild that this is the way it looks, and I think that's one number one. You just won't see any movement. There's too much volatility with only having 60 games. Like you can pull Miami Marlins and just get sick for a week and a half and then just not have to play those games, I guess. I don't know.
I can't remember if we talked about it before, but just the fact that if you have 16 teams in the playoffs, I think the opposite of the intended effect will happen. Like you could have a team that's on the edge and they'll just think, oh, we can get in. We don't need to trade. Who cares? We'll get in and have our shot and good luck. Like if you're the seventh or eighth best team, I don't think that makes you want to go and trade out and just be a huge buyer at the chance of maybe being a sixth or fifth. Like if you think you're going to get in, you're not going to do anything. I don't think because the teams who are like the 10th team in the majors, they're not good enough anyway, or the 10th team in the league. Like if you're in the AL and you're the Royals, just because there's an extra spot, I don't think you're going to suddenly forego your rebuild just because you might get in as an eighth team and then be obliterated by the freaking Yankees. So I don't think it's going to do what they think it's going to do. I think this year they won't read a whole lot into it just because it's 60 games and so weird. But in the future, if they do this, I don't think it's going to work the way they want. And we're going to have losing teams in the postseason just because they can.
Well, again, I think things will shake out a little easier. 162, like the Rays are better than the Orioles are not on 500. They're really bad. they shouldn't be. They're going to win today. For God's sake, they're going to be 8-7 after today.
Which is, what is that? The same record as the Indians or close?
That is one win behind the Indians. It's the same record as the White Sox, who's considered a good team. The Astros, again, are losing record. Rangers are losing record. So, yeah, no, I mean, the Cardinals are 2-3, so who the hell knows what to do with that one? I didn't realize they'd only played 5 games. Good Lord. I don't even know what you do with that. Like, they're in second place, ostensibly. I don't know how that works. Math doesn't work out at all. What's going on here?
Well, I think I don't think they're doing a minimum number of games required. Maybe they are. I don't think they are, but they're just going to go by winning percentage. I guess, but because you can't make the Cardinals play that much.
No. All right, get out there, play a triple header, five inning
game. I can't even imagine an owner want to do that. Like, burn out your team just for this season, and then you're screwed in the full season when you have fans.
No, it's silly. I think things will shake out a little bit better, but like you said. The Orioles aren't going to trade anyone to add pieces to make the playoffs. The Tigers aren't going to. Like, their whole point is trading the existing. Like, they would prefer to trade away CJ Cron to get more prospects, right? Like, he's their best hitter right now. They'd prefer to trade away Jacoby Jones, probably, because they don't care about a 28-year-old because their window doesn't open for another 2 years. Like, they don't want, I don't know, maybe they do. I don't know. Like, 28's a weird age, but you know, it's kind of in the middle. But like, CJ Cron's 30 years old. He's a first baseman. They don't actually want him around. So I don't know.
CJ Cron, nobody wants him around. He doesn't stick anywhere. He always hits big dingers, then he's just gone.
You know, and Tommy Pham. I didn't realize Tommy Pham was on the
he's
Padres.
Everywhere, and he's so good too, and he moves everywhere.
Like, he's like the Jamal Crawford of baseball, who just like, ends up on a different team. Like, well, he's good enough to have around, but we also just, we can't right now. You know, like, I don't know. I don't think that the Orioles are planning on building around Jose Iglesias, who's hitting .405 right now. So, you know, I just, that's the true facts right there. True facts stated right here.
All right, Merritt. Every week, we ask everybody on Facebook and Twitter for their questions, and we'll do one. We got a couple this week that'll work out. The first one, at JQueen4 on Twitter, they want to know, is Lindor pressing too hard, not seeing the ball well, or something else entirely? I think he's gotten a little better recently, but man, there is something there. It's the sliders. Everybody's found out he can't hit. They're throwing those a lot. It's got to be some pressing, I would think. I think everybody was pressing at one point. I would hope if when everybody else is relaxing, he is. It's tough to watch right now because he's not great. I don't think it's to the point that he was overrated or they shouldn't have signed him or whatever, but I think he's going to be great. Obviously, I wouldn't move him. Like, what?
Wait, what do you mean overrated? He's amazing. I love him.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's already people that are saying that. They're like, oh, he sucks. He's terrible. Just because he's had a bad week. I don't think that's the case at all. I would still, there's no reason I would make him like the seventh or eighth hitter or something crazy just because he's had a bad couple games in a weird season. I think he's going to be great again. I think you leave him where he is and you hope that he turns it around when it matters. I don't know. I think pressing is the big thing, that he wants to be the hero for the team. And I think he's at least great at being a cheerleader when he's bad, which is good to see. Like, he's always the first guy that the camera cuts to cheering on his team when they're like, I would assume he's one of the cheerleaders for Franmil Reyes when he was having his downturn, but I don't know. It's just rough to watch Francisco Lindor, how bad he's been. And I think he's just trying a little too hard right now. He's never been, I think running the stats with players in scoring position gets a little overblown, but he's also just never been good at it. I don't know. That doesn't change the fact that I would put him there every single time if I had the option to. It's just a coincidence of his career to this point that he hasn't hit well in the clutch, but I wouldn't change anything about how you use him. But it would be nice to see him. Just imagine a half season of him being super clutch, hitting everything after the start that he's had. I think it'd be really good.
I didn't even think about this too. Just with the weirdness of this season, and remember there was an article, I think it was on Fangraphs, talking about how starters are throwing even fewer innings than they did last year, which set an all time low number of innings pitched. But just for like over the last three years, Lindor saw 58% fastballs in 2017, 58 in 2018, 58.8 in 2019, only 42.2 this year. And you mentioned, of course, the breaking pitch is up to 36% this year. He's never seen more than, 27%. So it could be just part of it that, starters are able to just kind of empty their tank earlier. Like, they know they don't have to figure out a way to get through an order a third time. So he is just seeing harder pitches to hit. But, like, I don't know. Like, he has a highest line drive rate of his career. I think he's still hitting the ball well. As far as I can tell, like, his exit velocity is what averages 89%. That's not any much worse than it's ever been. Launch angle is a little high, I guess. I don't know. Who cares? He's hitting more balls on his quote unquote sweet spot percentage is 35.3, whatever that is. That's the highest of his career. So.
Yeah, I think that's the.
I think it's a small sample size thing. I just, because that's the thing. I can't look at his batting line of 234, 279, 422 and say this means something to me,
right?
Because like we're at 64 at bats, which is barely the beginning of a normalization point of anything.
Yeah, and it sucks too because it still doesn't mean anything, but it means so much more in the context of this season. Right. Like, oh, sure, 64 at bats is nothing for. Regularly, but it also, when you're just looking purely at the results and what it means, it's terrible over.
I mean, he's hit three home runs, which is something, and he's hitting the ball hard. His hard hit rate is lower than it was ever, I guess, but it's still slightly above average. He is striking out the most of his career, and he's walking the lowest rate of his career. So I don't know. I mean, again, it could just be, yes, he's facing more.
And he's seeing more sliders.
Relievers, and he's facing more sliders, and he's just dealing with. I mean, batters have to deal with an incredibly different makeup right now. Like I said, like outside of the Indians, every team is going to the bullpen immediately. They have 28 players. Like, that's three extra relievers most teams are carrying. You know,
yeah,
that makes things a lot easier for the manager because they can just go and start outside of the Indians. Most teams have at least three or four just absolute savage relievers. Like the Indians have two and a half or something.
Yep.
I don't know. I can't figure out Cam Hill yet, but I don't know. It's too hard to tell. But yeah, it would be nice if he would hit the ball a little bit harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for that one. So we'll finish up with Denise Banco on Facebook. She wants to know how low is too low for MLB batting average. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume this is about Carlos Santana, which I just wanted to talk about him, so I didn't include this question because. Our boy is not hitting the ball well, but he's also walking a shitload.
Yeah, who cares?
It was like 10 walks in three games. It's
20 walks already.
But I mean, at what point is that a thing? Like, how low does he have to hit before it matters that he can't get on base? I would assume there's got to be some point. I don't think he's there yet. But his line is ridiculous right now. He's batting 174. Oh, but also getting on base 424. and then he has a .239 slugging percentage.
Like, he's been on base every game. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's on pace to once again get 80 walks, which he's done every year of his career.
He has a 30% walk rate right now.
Like, it's absolutely insane. It is wild. So, to answer that question, who cares? Honestly, if he can hit, if he can keep this up and he hits 7 more home runs and he has 10 home runs and just
10 home runs walks, is really good in this season. I think you want to lower that to like,
okay, let's say
he hits 3 or 4 total, maybe.
Okay, well, no, let's say he gets 6 home runs and then he also, because he runs into a few of just meatballs that are tossed down the middle of the plate. And then he gets 80 walks. Like, come on. Can we even be mad? Like, I don't even know, man. It'd be nice.
I can't be mad at Carlos Santana. So that's an irrelevant question, man. I don't. He can walk all he wants.
Right. I mean, I can't believe he has no doubles. Like, that's wild to me. He has nothing.
He has nothing besides the one home run, some hits, and walks. It's ridiculous. No infield fly balls. It's kind of neat. He's going to be a really interesting stat anomaly, I think, this season. When we look back at, like, oh, that weird 2020 season, Carlos Santana is going to be the one of the ones that you can look at, like, what in the world was going on there?
Yeah, he's going to end up hitting 085 with a .500 on base percentage. What the fuck just happened here?
Yeah. It's like a .130 slugging percentage or something.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah. All right, cool, man. Yeah, great.
Yeah. So thank you for that question, Denise. I just wanted to talk about Carlos Santana. And thank you, everybody else, for listening. If you're not already, go ahead and on iTunes and leave us a nice review. A nice review. Somebody left a 1-star review and said no to the Indians name change. Like, I don't, that doesn't have, that's not us. I'm not going to change the name. The Cleveland Indians plan based on your podcast review. Maybe it's now I will. Just because you left me a 1-star, I'm going to go.
Yeah, that's it. I've changed it now.
It's now done. They're now the Rubber Ducks. We've stolen the Rubber Ducks name.
They're the Duckmen.
The Duckmen. There's an apostrophe. It's not even Duckman or Duckmen. It's just Duckmen. There you go. So, Merritt, we'll talk to you next week.
Very well.
See you then. See you.